Well, hello, superstars, and welcome back to another episode of Word Up with Danny Katz. Today I am joined by me. I am solo podcasting. I have a bunch of fun things for us to cover in no particular order. We're just going to dance around, and I trust you're going to love it. I am recording on December 26th. I trust everyone had a lovely Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, which in this moment is still going strong. And before we dive in, I'm reminding you to click that subscribe button, to like, to share, to comment, to send this podcast to at least one friend, because sharing is caring and caring is badass. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com to ensure that we stay in touch despite whatever big tech shenanigans may or may not be happening in the outside world. As well, I'm alerting you to the fact that I'm going to be switching up my Instagram posting come January 1st as a direct result of me reading their new user agreement. If you have not yet read Meta's new user agreement, I highly recommend you do that, because the new stipulations for 2025 are even more egregious, offensive, anti-life, and disrespecting of their customer base than their previous iterations. It's really great to be informed. And I'm going to be moving my former Instagram posting over to my Locals page. So I recommend signing up for my Locals at dannykatz.locals.com. It's free to sign up for what will be replacing my Instagram postings. And if you are wanting to tune in to the second half of this podcast, all my podcasts, and nab oodles of bonus content, you can support me there for as little as $5 a month. So that does it for our housekeeping. Let's dive into today's show. So starting off with a little, I'm hearing the little, and we're going to get into that later in the podcast. We're going to start off with a simple planetary service announcement around communication strategies. This has happened a few times, which has me inspired to speak to it. And what I realized in terms of egregious communication patterns, specifically in the digital space, is we don't know what we don't know. I don't think that people are trying to be opaque or difficult or high maintenance. I realize that we just haven't been taught. Emily Post wasn't around in the digital age, and we have yet to establish our ground rules there. And so what I'm noticing is, please do not send links to videos or podcasts without any context whatsoever. The first time this happened was a couple months ago, when a friend sent me, he just sent me a text saying, you should have me on my podcast. So I was already looking at the triggers arising in me around the word should, right? For anyone who's hasn't read my books, Word Up, Little Languaging Hacks for Big Change, The Language of Betterarchy, A Blueprint for Uniting Against Tyranny, or seen my illions of videos on the matter, should is coded with the frequencies of wrong use of will. It is coded with the frequencies that transmit the idea that whoever is utilizing the should has authority over the person who is receiving the should. This is all happening in the subconscious or unconscious, and yet it is still happening. So when I receive a text that says, you should have me on your podcast, I'm already dealing with the amygdala hijack and the triggers that are associated with the coding in that word should. And we don't know what we don't know. So I use my big girl tools to transmute the triggers and step into the conversation. So my next question was, what are you wanting to talk about? And then I was sent a 90-minute podcast wherein this person who was pitching himself to be on my podcast was sending me another podcast he was on. In the grand scheme of being polite and respectful and considerate, like, if you are, And I love audacity. I love when people are bold enough to pitch me on having them on my podcast. I've done that countless, hundreds and thousands of times as a journalist. So I understand the courage it takes to blindly pitch someone. And also, like, it's way harder. I don't know if it's harder. It's traditionally, in any sort of like media, PR, marketing context, it's infinitely more effective to have someone else pitch on our behalf. And as someone who has mostly chosen to issue gatekeepers, and if you haven't seen my last podcast on gatekeepers, I recommend tuning in for a deeper dive on that issue. I respect people who are going it alone, right? So I am more open to people who are pitching themselves and people who are going the traditional gatekeeper route. But if you're pitching yourself to be on someone else's show, to have someone else read your book, like whatever it is, it's really incumbent upon the person who's pitching to make it easy for the receiver to hear and understand their message, and thus book them. Right, I'm going through this right now. It's a little bit different with a marketing team I've recently partnered with, where they're asking me, like, we need stories, understanding like what you do, the problems you solve. This is around language and consulting, and the changes that you've helped foment with your clients. And I understand, like, yeah, that is my job to do the heavy lifting so that people can easily see, oh, this is why I want to hire her. I see she's done all of these things. I see this is what she does. Got it. Sign me up. Same with pitching someone on a podcast, right? If I'm pitching myself, it's incumbent upon me to explain, here's what I want to talk about, and to lay it out succinctly in a way that's easy and accessible for whomever I'm pitching to grasp. What we don't want to do, cancel, clear, delete, what I experience is extremely rude and inconsiderate, is to send someone a 90-minute podcast with zero context, and expect them to devote 90 minutes of their sacred time and attention to feeling into what I may or may not be talking about, given that it was my idea in the first place to be on that person's podcast, right? So even if we are, in my mind, crossing the line and expecting someone to, read several thousand words or watch a podcast that's over an hour long, it would still be helpful to contextualize. Well, this is a good example of some of the things I want to talk about, and then bullet them in the text, in the email, to save the person whom you're pitching the time and effort from researching why they might want to put us on our podcast. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like, unfortunately, this tech, yeah, I'm going to judge it as a nightmare. And we are going to get into the futurist movement and the futurist manifesto later in this podcast, because it seems a lot of us are grossly misinformed and confused as to what that actually means. But while there are certainly upsides to tech, the downsides are, which makes no sense, which also just proves that it's a freaking op, is like, given how quickly we have the ability to communicate and do things, right? Think back in the day of faxes, how long it take to like keep the phone off the line while this fax machine took hours and hours to transmit a single document, right? Look at what we can do with email. Back in the day when it was just typewriters, you make one mistake, you rip that paper out, you're starting that whole page from scratch. Then along came word processors, which made it easier to make edits. But now with computers, everything's quicker. And yet, it's not freeing up more recreational time for us. It seems like the social engineers have like helped get us into this snag where the easier things become, and the more quickly we can do things, it seems like the more things there are to do. I liken this to healing in terms of like our own personal evolution. In my experience, the more that I heal on like a fractal holographic level, all of a sudden, the more I'm tasked with healing. Like I'll heal one thing and then six new things come up to heal, which is its own sort of negotiation with the soul and with with the whole evolutionary process, but when we are wanting other people to lend us their sacred attention and to consider collaborating with us, it's really incumbent upon us to contextualize why that is, to let the people know, here's why, here's what I can offer, here's what I want to talk about, not send them a 90-minute video expecting them to just put in more effort to receive the message that we're too lazy to elucidate on, to unpack for them. You know, I say very, very often, it is the job of the communicator to communicate in such a way so that they can be heard and understood. So I feel like it's really crossing a line to expect others to do double time, to put in extra effort to understand us when we're not willing to simply expand upon our initial ideas. The second instance, which was infinitely less egregious, and were this a book and I were beating it out, it probably would have been smarter to start off with the example I'm about to give, but that's okay. Time isn't linear, and I'm gonna pause for a sip. Was an ex-boyfriend who I haven't spoken to in ages, out of the blue, sends me a link on social media, just the link. There's no context, there are no words around it. So I click through the link and it's a podcast, seemingly on telepathy, but it's the main page of the podcast. So it's like a list of 15 episodes. And again, there's no context and nothing's coming to mind as I click through as like, why would he send this to me? Like, I'm like calling back in my mind, was there an instance in our 5.5 years together wherein we were really into telepathy? Is this responding to a question that I don't remember asking? Like, what is this about? So I respond to the text and say, great to hear from you. Why did you think to send this to me? And he said, because it's awesome. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? Is there a particular episode of awesomeness that you're inspired to share? Would you like to let me know why you think this is awesome and why you think that I would think this is awesome, given that we haven't spoken in years? Is there a particular episode that resonated with you more that you want to attune me to? Like, you just expect me to carve out, it was probably over, like, let's see, it's 15 an hour each. At least 15 hours, 20 hours. You want me to just carve out 20 hours to just randomly listen to all this stuff because you think it's awesome? Does it count as awesome in our Venn diagram of crossover? Do you think all think it's awesome? Like, there was literally nothing. And I understand the excitement of tuning in to a podcast that blows our minds. Like, you've heard me mention The Hidden Life is Best so many times. That being said, I really like the most recent Romeo and Juliet episode. But especially, like, I'm actually not thinking of anyone in my current iteration of life, because when I think of it, like, I've lived so many lifetimes in this singular lifetime. And you know, I'm relinquishing the outdated pattern of comparing my life to other people and wondering, like, am I doing it wrong? Why don't I have all the same people in my life that I had in my life at age 20, the way I see so many people doing? Why don't I have this, like, tight-knit crew who's always with me, come what may, regardless of how I shift and transform during the years? I've let that go because I just realized, like, I'm doing my earth walk my way, and my way works perfectly for me, and it's okay that it doesn't look like other people's ways. But even as I'm, like, going through, you know, my Rolodex in my mind and thinking of the few friends that I have had for decades, I still would never send anyone a link without some context. Hey, I was listening to this and I thought of you. Even that's enough. Like, you don't have to break down for me, like, what are the specific points in the podcast? But this is someone who I haven't talked to in several years, and I just get a link to a full podcast homepage with every episode they've ever done. And then part of me like attributes it to people just not being very busy, which I think is awesome. I strive, aim to not be very busy. But for those of us who are doing like 9 trillion things, like writing books, like teaching courses, like recording podcasts, like illustrating, coloring books, like coaching and consulting, like please be kind and considerate and help. Even if you're just wanting to share something wonderful, because I love how it's speaking to different means of communicating, and I know that you yourself are devoted to the study of communication, and I specifically thought that episode 17 would resonate. Something, just something. Context, please provide context when suggesting things or sharing things with other people. I think that's just a good Digital Sharing Etiquette 101 or Digital Pitching Etiquette 101. I see this a lot. This is slightly different, but in the same vein of my friend pitching himself to be on my podcast without giving me the slightest clue as to what he would want to talk about, and then sending me a 90-minute podcast to listen to. It's like, that's a big ask. And I also get this with, it's less so friends and more so acquaintances or people who I've met once or twice who send me their books to read. Like, no. That's just a no. Even people like friends who are dear friends of mine, who are, many times over published authors, we don't send each other our books to read. That is such a big ask, especially in this day and age, with people dealing with so much data overwhelm, tech overwhelm, content overwhelm. It's really not done in terms of the realm of book writing to just randomly assume that our friends are going to read our books for us, or randomly assume that our colleagues or people who we barely know are gonna read our books for us. Trust me, I wish it was different. Like, I would love it if my smart friends and colleagues would be willing to read my books before they go out. It doesn't really work that way. I say this with as much kindness and compassion as I can, just helping us understand the industry landscape and the author landscape. Just knowing that, like, that's not something that people normally do. We usually pay people to read our books. I mean, if we're kind enough to have someone who's willing to do it, in my experience, it's usually an elder who's retired and actually has the time to do it. But in my experience, random read asks are pretty untoward. Is that the right word? Look it up in real time so I can make sure I'm using it correctly. Untoward definition. Improper, unseemly, unfavorable, or adverse. I'm gonna stick with it. If it's a chapter, maybe, if it's a small sample, if there's a specific ask, but other like editors make a lot of money, and it takes a lot of time and effort to read people's stuff. So, just another planetary service announcement for all my writer friends out there. It's kind of an interest industry no-no. It is an interest industry no-no, and I look forward to the time where we all have more spaciousness, and it's easier of those asks. But in my lifetime, that's hasn't been the case. Okay, what's next on the list? All right, well, because I brought up the word little at the beginning of this podcast, I'm going to move on to our next, which actually has to do with an author asking me to look at his stuff. Now, what happened was there's this guy who I met one time at one Raw Spirit Festival. Well, over a decade ago, 15 and a half years ago. I met him one time Of course, this is, back then we become Facebook friends and there's been some exchanges along the way, but I would hardly call us close and I would hardly call us friends. He's someone whom I met. So this person reached out to me a couple weeks ago on Facebook, and the reach out was fairly inappropriate with like a lot of overt sexual innuendo, which I understand is just this guy's way. But it didn't really work given that he was reaching out in a professional capacity to see if I would be open to taking on a paid gig. So props for that. And I really appreciate the respect for my time and attention. And history as a published author and, professional editor, that he was willing to pay me to ask if I'd be willing to edit his book. So I was already not really feeling it. So full disclosure, I was probably like a little more terse in our exchanges than I would have been. But to be perfectly honest, like that was inspired by like the overt and grossly inappropriate sexual innuendo that was coloring the whole outreach. So in as long as we're on the topic of planetary service announcements, be clear if you're reaching out in a personal capacity or a professional capacity, and if it's going to be appropriate to make lewd sexual innuendos when you're asking if someone's going to be willing to work with you in a professional capacity, because it soured me right off the bat. And so after some back and forth, this person sent me a sample chapter. Now, this is how it works. In terms of taking on any editing, I guess it's mostly an editing gig, is that they send us the potential client sends the potential editor a sample chapter. I am still wrestling with my own annoyance in like carving out the time to look at something with an editorial eye, and that's really mostly speaking to where I'm at now, which is I've got so much going on in terms of my own projects and the consulting clients that I'm working with, which is like where I'm really steering the bulk of my focus these days, where I'm just not really wanting to do like writing or editing for higher gigs unless they pay like an obscene fortune. So I was in the process of wrestling with my own reticence to even take on a job like this because it just takes so much creative bandwidth to take my attention away from all of my projects and focus it into the client's projects. I have super type A tendencies and like super overachiever tendencies. So if I am hired for a writing or editing gig, I put so much love and devotion into it that it can kind of be draining. So I read through his sample essay. I actually read through it twice and noted like, so there are different levels of editing, right? Not to bore you guys, I'll move through it really quickly. There's line editing where we're looking at like punctuation, repetition of word, like exact sentence structure, like really tight grammar stuff. And there's also like a more high level structural edit, which in my mind is harder and takes more heavy lifting, wherein I'm keeping, like in this instance, like the integrity and flow of the essay as a whole, or the book, the integrity and flow of the book as a whole in my mind, right? And reading through the whole thing in terms of like, is this the best flow and balance and build and pacing in terms of like the cohesive and harmonic largesse and wholeness of the piece. So I wasn't quite sure which, like, the scope of the edit he was asking for. So I read through it with an eye on both. And so, from my perspective, even though he hadn't hired me yet, like, it's a generous act. I'm looking at a whole essay, it was a collection of essays. So I'm looking at a whole essay and I'm offering like both the high level and the more like minute level, which for me is way easier, perspective. So I was letting him know like the scope of what I could offer and what I thought the compensation would be and how long I thought it would take based on what I'd read. And then he said, well, what's your feedback? So that's when I went through it again. and I offered my feedback on. He had basically two example stories, and both example stories were using the same joke, the same kind of themed joke. And so I recommended, like, these are too close together to work. I would recommend coming up with actually a different example, a story that uses a different angle in to make your point. So we ultimately had a call to discuss the scope of edits, and he said, and the other piece of it in determining whether or not I wanted to work with him is, and I go through this with my potential consulting clients, and I go through this with potential coaching clients, is I'm weighing how coachable are they? How receptive is this person to my editorial feedback? Is he going to take my editorial feedback, do with it what he wants, like a mature, contained person? Is he going to fight me on it? Is he going to tell me I'm wrong? Like, what are we really dealing with? Because that also affects what the compensation is going to be. Because if I'm going to be tussling with someone and they're going to be like fighting me on it, then that's definitely going to invite more compensation, because that person is clearly going to be more of a pain in the ass to work with. Coaching clients, if they're not receptive to coaching, same with consulting clients, if they're not receptive to my feedback, then it's just a deal breaker, because I don't want to be fighting and I don't want to be taking on a client if I'm not going to be able to take them to the finish line, across the finish line, right? So I'm also vetting, you know, in coaching, it's like how coachable, how receptive is this person to edits and feedback on his super precious writing? And I get it, as a writer, like, we get so married to our words and our perspectives and our jokes. Like, I understand. And it's a muscle, it's a skill that we cultivate. You know, I absolutely cultivated this working with editors in the, you know, newspaper magazine space, learning to take critical feedback, learning to like let go of the reins, tighten up the grip in service to a better piece. So we're on the phone discussing the scope of the editing work, and he goes, well, you know, about that little comment you threw, about that, your little comment about my essay and the callback that I made. And then he goes on to explain, like, you clearly don't watch The Family Guy. You clearly don't understand, you know, what a callback is in comedy. And I'm just like listening. And in my mind, I'm like, we're done. Like, we're, and why are we done? Because of one word, because of two syllables, because he threw the word in little, your little comment, right? I didn't have to hear anything more about what he was gonna say, because what that word little was communicating was, I'm up here in a higher hierarchical position, and yes, we are talking about hierarchy and hierarchical languaging, which I unpack in a big, deep, nerdy way in The Language of Betterarchy. So the coding embedded in that little, your little comment, is I'm up here above you, and you're this peon beneath me who's a little bit or a lot of bit stupider, or who doesn't get it, and your feedback, which I am pitching myself to you to give me on my entire book, but your little feedback, so he's diminishing it, which is so inappropriate when it's like, wait a minute, I carved out the time to read your essay twice for free to attune my critical published author lens to your writing in service to your writing being better, not as a means to slag you or cut you down, but as a means of generously offering feedback so that your essay could be as good as it could possibly be, right? So what that little demonstrated is, like, this person is on an ego trip, is blinded by his ego around his writing, and is not open to my critical feedback, which is fine. This is the whole point of the vetting process. And what was beautiful about that and the call was we both got to see this is not aligned. This is not an aligned fit. What he clearly wanted in terms of feedback was praise. And I understand the desire. If it's someone's first book, and writing a book, it's like it's a ton of hard work, a ton of heavy lifting. We're putting our ideas out there. But he wasn't coming to me for praise, and I'm not really a handholder, right? And I've come across this in terms of my coaching and consulting clients as well, where it's like, I'm not gonna do the cherry merry sunshine, like spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. No, I'm gonna give it to you straight, trusting that you have the tools to work with yourself like an autonomous adult. And if you're needing that kind of spoonful of sugar or handholding, no harm, no foul, much respect, I'm not the gal for you. And that's what we came to. But but if he had wanted to keep that door open, and I don't know, I suspect he did, because otherwise why would we be having a business call on a Sunday? He would have been wiser to communicate with me in an infinitely more respectful, less hierarchical way, more equal, more betterarchical, by just saying, you know, well, you know, one of my concerns as I was reading your feedback, that comment has me concerned, cancel clear delete. You know, as I'm reading through your comments, you know, this one about the callback back has me wondering if you're familiar with the type of callback humor that they use in like in Family Guy. And I just want to make sure that we're on the same page and that you're understanding what I'm trying to accomplish. Something that was more respectful, but your little comment, like that door for me just slammed shut at that point. It was just like, no way do I want to work with this person. Something for us to be mindful of in terms of what languaging patterns are going to shut people down, are going to close doors. And, you know, full transparency, I'm sharing this from a place of a lot of experience. I've gotten myself in a lot of trouble with a big fat mouth, you know, Mars and Aries, Aries rising, where in the past, I've spoken so quickly before I've had time to think about it and be more strategic, and lost a lot of opportunities by allowing my ego to speak for me instead of moving more slowly, speaking more consciously and mindfully, and speaking into the outcome that I'm wanting to be achieved. That is a very different communication pattern. And for me, this is one of my, you know, biggest learning curves that I'm still in the process of mastering myself. Instead of speaking from like a dopamine rush, instead of speaking from ego, instead of speaking from insecurity or snarkiness or rage or know-it-allness, learning to speak into the ideal outcome, and allowing the ideal outcome to inform my languaging pattern. So if this person wanted to keep the door open, his smartest move would have been to not say your little comment and diminish me and make me smaller, because his fragile ego was rattled by critical feedback of the essay he sent me to edit, instead of what I can see now was just like the hyperbolic praise and ass kissing that I think he was really going for. And again, that might have been smarter from my perspective, except I don't work like that and I don't want to work like that. It's like, I understand certain jobs, certain clients, it's going to take a smoother, softer approach. But honestly, those aren't my ideal clients. My ideal clients roll the way I roll, where there's enough self-esteem and strength of character that they don't need a lot of like praise and handholding, especially when it's I'm being hired for like a writing gig, an editing gig. Like we're just doing brass tacks here, because it's already labor intensive and time consuming enough. So it inspires me to read about a little bit about this class of languaging from the aforementioned language of betterarchy. I want to slow down a little bit. I just noticed feeling like a bit of a rush. So we're going to do another sip. This is decaf chai coffee almond milk mixture. Yay, decaf. Yay for supporting the nervous system. Cold brew, no less, so that I can alkalize. All right, so this is from The Language of Betterarchy, which is available in print, ebook, and audiobook at your favorite online bookseller, as well as at Fruit of the Earth in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And this is from the judgment section. So basically, this all comes under the umbrella of wrong use of will languaging. Wrong use of will being a specific class or marker of hierarchical languaging, which is coded with, let me just save my multiple pages here, and then I'll give you my standard issue gesticulation for wrong use of will languaging, where we're playing the status game, where we're either putting ourselves above whomever we're speaking to, or we're putting ourselves below whomever we're speaking to, right? Anytime we're speaking in these status differentiations, instead of speaking from an equal plane, we're playing the wrong use of will game. We're speaking hierarchical languaging, remembering that hierarchy is an organizational structure that is defined by statusing and privileging by this thing. So when this guy was saying your little comment, he was putting me down. He was putting me down. He was putting my comment down. He's up here with his big, awesome, perfect book, and I'm down here with my little comment that's too stupid to understand his scatological callback humor, right? So that's all wrong use of will languaging. Judgment is a specific type of wrong use of will languaging. Little, right? He chose to judge my feedback, your little comment, versus just your comment, which would have been neutral, allowed me to stay open to working with him and to receiving whatever he was going to say. So I just want to go over the wrong use of will languaging, and then we'll go over the judgment specifically. Okay, so wrong use of will languaging describes hierarchical words and languaging strategies that insinuate the imposition of our will upon others, whether overtly or inadvertently. In addition to being fundamentally out of integrity, wrong use of will languaging inspires amygdala freakouts and contractions galore while fostering imbalanced power dynamics in our relationships and our culture, as well as all the inequality, resentment, and low vibe ickiness that come along with them. Wrong use of will seeps into our languaging habits in the most nuanced and insidious of ways. And while the majority of these communication patterns are unconscious and unintended, the consequences of their bandying are in no way tempered by the ignorance informing them. One of the primary issues with wrong use of will languaging is that it inspires contraction in whomever we are addressing. The coding transmitted to those on the receiving end of wrong use of will frequencies indicates that they're in a lesser status position and that the person who is addressing them is trying to control or dominate them. Whether conscious or not, this coding directs our neurochemistry to armor up and defend, which renders us deaf to the real deal meat of the messages being delivered. As such, our wisest move as conscious communicators and empowered betterarchical reality creators is to transmute any and all wrong use of will languaging patterns into their right use variety, wherein we are honoring the sovereign agency of our audience and whomever we are addressing. Okay, a couple caveats before we get into judgment. So wrong use of will also speaks to where we're putting ourselves on a lower pedestal and placing someone on a higher pedestal. And I've definitely run this thoroughly outdated communication pattern in the past, a kind of groveling or apologizing for things that don't need to be apologized for, or putting, it's usually like literary heroes up on a pedestal. That also comes under the category of wrong use of will languaging because, as Marianne Williamson said, God doesn't need us small. God needs us great. God needs our greatness. God needs us shining as brightly as possible. Like, that is what is going to shift this earth game, what is going to, help tip humanity into that 100th monkey critical mass of awakening, where we can all, like quantum leap into that next level. That's going to come from all of us being our biggest, best, most empowered selves. So know that when we're, pulling this false humility thing, making ourselves smaller, we are transmitting wrong use of will frequencies, but we're also dropping the ball and doing all of humanity and all of the planet a disservice. Caveat number two, when I do go through this in the book, wrong use of will is kind of a send up, a tribute to the Right Use of Will book series. You've probably heard me speak about them before, by Cyan Darohan, and I am in favor of everyone on planet Earth reading at least the first book in the series, Right Use of Will, which is just like a definitive clarity on proper third chakra engaging and really clear parameters that support us in not imposing our will upon anyone, which is never okay. Pause for a sip. I was on this really fun podcast with Tom. He goes by Tom Foolery on Instagram last week, and it was so fun. And during our podcast, he goes, pause for sip. And he took a drink, and I was like, oh my God, that's so cute. People listen to my show. It's the weirdest thing about speaking into a little green light at the top of my laptop in a room by myself and writing books, and all of the ways that I personally put content out into the world is there's no real-time receptivity happening. So it's been this pattern since, back in the day of, writing for magazines and newspapers, is that like delightful surprise when I realize whomever I'm speaking to is familiar with my writing, or in this case, my podcast sip pausing is very heartwarming. Okay. And if you're not signed up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com, I recommend doing that immediately so that you can stay abreast when I do appear on other people's podcasts. I'll be announcing that one in the next newsletter. So picking up on the judgment section of wrong use of will, which is what that little, your little comment, little being the judgment in this case, here's why we're wise to avoid judgment. When we judge, we separate. We don't just separate, we attempt to diminish the other's status. The attempt to is in parentheses. I do have this like kind of parenthetical tick. And I kind of have a few literary ticks that they're a little fuzzy in translating when I'm reading aloud. I spoke to this in the beginning of the audiobook recording, as well as all the footnotes in this book. So if you're interested, I do recommend getting a printed copy so you can pick up on this extra layer that I put into all of my books. Okay, let's start again. When we judge, we separate. We don't just separate, we attempt to diminish the other's status. They're not just not us, they are beneath us. The act of judgment kicks that which or whom we are judging down a notch or two or 12. Their status plummets through the lens of our judgment. It's hierarchy a go-go. There's a drawing. I'm so partial. I think they're all super cute. But there's a drawing of a girl at the top of the hierarchical podium saying, "You're too loud," to the sad girl at the bottom of the podium. Because who's the girl at the top of the podium to judge what is the just right volume for anyone? Okay. Judgment alleges that we are objective arbiters of capital T truth and are divinely authorized to project our opinions as facts. Judgment implies that we hold superior knowledge that something is bad, that someone is immoral, that an object is overpriced, that a garment is ugly, or that yesterday's workshop sucked. When we judge, we project our unintegrated traumas, distortions, wounds, shadows, and programs onto that which we are judging, while unconsciously claiming omniscience and impartial almighty decider status that gives us license to smear our opinions all over the world at large. Aside from the psychological distortions to which judgment points, as a communication strategy, it's ineffective. Judgment shuts down the audience in its reductive generalizing, inspiring contraction in the process. Shorthand assessments like good, bad, right, wrong, and pretty ugly marginalize the ideas, entities, and circumstances they are modifying while doing a half-assed job of describing the scenario in question. All right, so then I go into an example. This is my own callback. In my own book, I'm calling back to something that I'd already written about. The judgment upgrade, so I give like a bunch of examples. I'm just coming to like to the tail end where I'm offering the upgrade. But since we're already dealing with the example of little comment, I don't need to go into all these other examples. The judgment upgrade invites us to hone in on descriptive adjectives that more accurately depict any preference we may be communicating while taking responsibility for our own experience of people, things, activities, circumstances, and behaviors such that we are not projecting our opinions as objective assessments. Rather, we are taking responsibility for our feelings as precisely that, our own subjective responses and reactions that have nothing to do with the empirical status of whatever it is we are describing. And then I have a list of better archetypal upgrades for judgments. So in the instance that I just shared about my little comment on his essay, when the whole point of our exchange was about me giving critical feedback on his whole book. So if we're inviting critical feedback for anything, it's on us to have the strength of character to put our ego aside to receive the feedback that we are asking for. From there, we can determine for ourselves that resonates, I'll hold on to that. That doesn't resonate, I'll let it go. But especially in instances where we're inviting it, it's bad form to argue with whomever is giving us the critical feedback we've just invited, right? All it's doing is showing like, yeah, this person's ego is a little shaky, is a little crackly, and can use some fortifying if this person is going to be able to graciously receive the feedback that they've asked for. So in this instance, instead of describing the little comment as being off, this person could have, and I'm thinking, all right, I'm gonna give the upgrade, but I also wanna caveat the upgrade with, it was super inappropriate in the instance of asking for professional critical feedback. But a smarter way to do it using the better archetypal upgrades would be, your comment about the scatological callback really didn't land well with me, and it has me wondering if you might not be the best person for the job because maybe you're not understanding this type of humor, right? So a little arrogant, but at least there's a shift between saying your little comment, right? Offering an empirical judgment on the comment as little, as diminished, as unworthy, versus your comment, neutral, didn't resonate with me. This person taking responsibility for his receiving of the comment versus stapling the comment to a judgment called little, thus diminishing the comment and diminishing the person offering the comment, AKA me, and creating feelings of ill will and creating a scenario wherein I had no desire to work with him. Super simple. So be very mindful of those petty little digs that can find their way into conversations. There are certain people in my life who I realize have this pattern, and I don't take it personally, and I don't even speak to it because I'm thinking of specific colleagues that I work with, because it's not my stuff, it's their stuff. And if it makes them, right? It's like, it's just indicative of, I don't even want to say a crack in our character, but like a place in our character that's still needing healing and wholing. If I need to put someone else down with like casual throwaway little digs, to make myself feel better. It's not really like if I'm not hired to help someone smooth those out, then I'm not going to sully my relationships by commenting on that sort of thing, unless it's really degrading me. It's having me feel unseen, disrespected in the relationship. And the relationship is one that I care about enough, value enough to put in the effort to ask for an adjustment, right? But like, here's another example I'm thinking of. No, you know what? I'm not even gonna go into it. I feel like we've covered it, and look, we all have our stuff, right? I have as much of my stuff. I'm sure I have communication patterns that are indicative of places in me that are still inviting holding, that invite my friends and they love me enough, you know, to hold space for me while I work through them. Same, same. But when we're talking about in a professional capacity, I'm really going to encourage us to be mindful of ways that we are subtly or not so subtly diminishing others and smooth that out of our communication, because it just creates, as you can hear, feelings of ill will, feelings of like, yeah, I don't really want to talk to this person or work with this person. And it closes doors and it limits our opportunities. What's interesting was the essay that I read from this person was about him running his mouth off in such a way that he ended up closing a door and losing an opportunity. And while he was speaking to that particular communication pattern from like a larger meta perspective, he was actually doing the exact same thing. It's so meta as I'm thinking about it, and shutting down yet another potential collaboration in the way that he was speaking to the feedback he was receiving on the essay about losing opportunities because of running his mouth off in egregious ways. Super meta, super on the nose. Like I said, I'm not close enough with this person to like really dive into the lesson. It's not on me. And it provided a great example for us to talk about in today's podcast. So yay for that. All right, what's next on the list? Okay. God, I have so much. We got a lot today. It's chock full. That does it for the first half of today's solo podcast. As you are inspired to tune into the second half, which I highly, highly recommend, because I do a very, very important analysis and unpacking of the Futurist Movement, the Futurist Manifesto, which will help us get coherent clarity on the current crop of so-called futurists who are attempting to steer our Earthship into techno-fascism. You can find the second half of this podcast and all my podcasts on both my Locals and Patreon websites. Those addresses are dannykatz.locals.com and patreon.com/dannykatz. At both of those platforms, for as little as $5 a month, you get access to all of my second half conversations, plus oodles of bonus content, plus the knowledge that you are supporting me in keeping on keeping on. Also reminding you to sign up for my newsletter at dannykatz.com so you could stay abreast of my every next guest stint, book drop, live event, new courses, new offerings, all will come through the newsletter. I'm also reminding you that I have an awesome Language of Healing webinar that is available now for instant lifetime access. If you or anyone you know or love is up-leveling your health, healing an injury, navigating a healing initiation, dealing with the type of shift in bodily usage that the Western medical paradigm would call chronic, devolutionary, degenerative, any of these things, I cannot recommend my Language of Healing program highly enough. It is chock full of simple, accessible tools you could start using immediately to begin to program every cell in your body for optimal accelerated healing, thriving, and functionality. All right, that does it. Thank you so much for sharing your sacred attention with me. Thank you for remembering that every word matters, that you are Omniscopic amazingness. I will see you over on the Locals and the Patreon. Have a rockin' day.